The U.S. government spends in a budgetary deficit, then issues treasuries to pay for the spending, then at a bigger rate than anybody else, buys the treasuries to cover the loss. An unbelievable Ponzi scheme. The U.S. government is the director of the Ponzi scheme, the old investor, and the new investor. A true masterclass. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we have got a fantastic little read today. This was posted on Twitter, and this just frames this, good Lord, this puts it into a context that just makes it so clear what's going on. And I think it's really hard for people to understand. It's hard for people to grasp exactly how big and how terrible the problem has gotten in the U.S. and, more importantly, in the fiat system. And failing to recognize that this is not business as usual and there is an end game here and that we may have already found ourselves in it. Now, I want to give a shout out to Swan Bitcoin and CoinKite for supporting this show and making this show possible. If you do not know Swan or you are trying to buy some Bitcoin, you can literally get this set up in just a few minutes and start buying. And up $10,000, the next $10,000 actually, have no fees. That's whether you have a new account or you've got one already. And then you want to send that to your hardware wallet, to your cold card. CoinKite makes the best Bitcoin security devices, and you can get a discount code with Bitcoin Audible, all one word. Details and all of that will be in the show notes. So if you're ever looking for a link and you think about this in, 2 days, just remember those links are right there in the description of this podcast. Now, the author of our piece today, or our Twitter thread, is Cole Walmsley, who I do not have any other exposure to. It just this post came across my feed, or somebody recommended it or shared it with me somewhere, and I thought it was fantastic. Just making it so clear what is going on. And it's just about the financial situation of the United States government, of the interest payment problem, of the debt problem that the U.S. Treasury, and this was actually in response. It was a retweet, which I read the retweet as we get into the actual post. But the original tweet is about the fact that the U.S. Treasury is now buying their own treasuries in the bond market. So they're issuing bonds that they cannot actually fund the interest payments on the debt. And they're having to issue bonds in order to pay for the interest on their previous debt. And nobody is buying bonds. So the Treasury is literally printing money to buy bonds. Like, this is crazy. And I think Cole just does a fantastic job of articulating exactly how crazy this is and how bad it's likely to get. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get into today's read. And it's titled, "The Most Important Thing You'll Read This Year." A Twitter thread from Cole Walmsley. This is insane. This is insane. This is a blatantly obvious sign of the impending doom of the U.S. dollar and all fiat currencies. Quote tweet, U.S. Treasury announces first Treasury buyback operation since 2002. The U.S. Treasury is launching its first buyback program since 2002, scheduled to start on May 29, 2024. The program is designed to improve liquidity in the Treasury market and is expected to run through July 2024. During this period, the Treasury plans to hold weekly liquidity support buybacks of up to $2 billion per operation, with up to $500 million allocated for TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. This initiative aims to ensure the Treasury market remains the deepest and most liquid in the world, addressing concerns about market functioning and resilience. Comment from the tweet, in my opinion, this is a bank bailout. This is as important as anything you will read this year. The United States Treasury issues bonds and other investment securities. They call these treasuries. The U.S. Treasury issues treasuries when the U.S. federal government spends past their budget, resulting in a, quote, budgetary deficit. The sale of treasuries makes up for the loss. The treasuries are sold and tacked on as a debt. This is the substance of the big $34 trillion debt number in the United States. Key point. The U.S. federal government has been in a budgetary deficit in 49 of the last 53 years, with the last surplus year being in 2001. But yet, even in that 2001, quote, budgetary surplus year, the total debt amount increased. Why? Because a whole bunch of debt from years past came due. The U.S. Treasury issues their treasuries with time periods of ownership, ranging from 4 weeks to 30 years. So in 2001, the government had debt coming due that was issued to investors in 1971, as well as 1981, 1991, 1994, 1996, 1998, 1999, and the previous year. The debt that was due in 2001 exceeded the budgetary surplus. Debt issuance is not a part of the budget. Thus, the government had to issue new debt to pay off the old debt, adding on further to the debt total. Key point, the U.S. Treasury, which is part of the U.S. federal government, has to sell new debt to new investors to pay off the old debt from old investors. This is because of 1, the constant budgetary deficits, and 2, the debt from years past coming due. Key point, being that the definition of a Ponzi scheme is an investment scheme where new investor money is used to pay off old investors, the U.S. federal government is running a Ponzi scheme to the tune of $34.7 trillion and counting. Trillion is just a word, so let's make sure we note the significance. A billion seconds ago was 1993, 31 years ago. A trillion seconds ago was 30,000 BC. And then multiply that trillion by 34.7. That is the scale of the United States debt problem. But wait, it gets worse. Key point, the U.S. Treasury always has to have buyers of its debt, because if they don't, they won't be able to pay off, 1, the deficit spending, and 2, the old debt coming due, and the interest on that debt. If they fail to pay those off, the government would default and collapse. Well then, who buys all the U.S. government debt? Key point, the largest buyer and owner of the U.S. federal government debt is the U.S. federal government themselves. Don't trust, verify. A chart of U.S. Treasury securities holders by type, showing the largest holders of U.S. Treasury securities being specifically federal and government accounts at $12.26 trillion as of 2022. Take a second to contemplate how insane that is. The U.S. government spends in a budgetary deficit, then issues treasuries to pay for the spending, then at a bigger rate than anybody else, buys the treasuries to cover the loss. An unbelievable Ponzi scheme. The U.S. government is the director of the Ponzi scheme, the old investor, and the new investor. A true masterclass. But how did they do this? They have a money printer. It's that simple. The debt might as well not be real. Key point, the United States is not the only country that runs this playbook. 182 of the 222 countries in the world are in budgetary deficits. The Ponzi scheme is everywhere. The U.S. is the kingpin of the modern monetary world. They are the head honcho, the high priest, the big cheese. The current global financial economy is built on the backs of the United States. There would be a massive problem if the United States had debt buyer troubles. In short, an increasing amount of investors are growing scared of the United States debt situation, turning them away from the purchasing of U.S. treasuries. Recent headlines, quote, Treasury bond auction runs into weak demand amid fears that soaring U.S. debt will overwhelm Wall Street, October 12, 2023. Quote, 30-year Treasury auction breaks bad, sinks stock market, November 9, 2023. World to drown in U.S. debt, Moody's downgrades country's debt, November 17, 2023. 5-year Treasury auction was a dud, January 24, 2024. Treasury's $16 billion auction of 20-year bonds produces very ugly results, quote, February 21, 2024. Highest Treasury yields of the year fail to tempt buyers to auction, April 11, 2024. With lower demand, and as quote tweeted below, the U.S. Treasury is starting a, quote, Treasury buyback operation aimed to, as they say, quote, improve liquidity in the Treasury market. What is really happening is that the Treasury is using their money printer to directly buy the Treasuries that they are issuing, ensuring those low-demand Treasury auctions don't continue. This causes inflation in the money supply, which is a dangerous outcome. Here's where the cookie crumbles. The United States Central Bank, the Federal Reserve, has a 2% inflation target. Inflation has not been at 2% recently, and in fact has been accelerating higher for 3 months in a row. The Federal Reserve has set high interest rates, currently at 5.25%, as a method of discouraging borrowing, spending, and taming inflation. But it's not working, and there's a bigger problem. Key point, the U.S. federal government pays interest to investors that own the treasuries, and this interest is part of the budget. Higher interest payments equals more federal spending, equals bigger budgetary deficits, equals more debt issuance, equals higher supply of treasuries, equals lower demand, equals less buyers, equals treasury printing, equals higher inflation, equals higher interest rates, equals higher interest payments, a catastrophic feedback loop. The interest paid out by the federal government has spiked in recent years. You need to see the chart that's posted here just to understand the hockey stick straight up problem of the debt interest rate that our government has. But even the chart he has here only shows it going up to $900 billion, which it is now over $1 trillion. And understand, it was less than half of what it is today in 2020. Now back to the read. The United States dollar is screwed. The Federal Reserve has set interest rates to tame inflation, but it's not working. High interest rates are causing bigger interest payments, causing larger budgetary deficits. This is causing the U.S. Treasury to issue more debt, which investors are getting scared of because of runaway inflation and compounding debt levels, which is now causing the Treasury to print money and provide, quote, liquidity to stabilize the Treasury market, adding fuel to the inflation fire once more. The Federal Reserve can further raise interest rates to cool inflation, but that would increase interest payments and deficit spending, requiring even more debt issuance and liquidity, which fuels inflation. An increase in interest rates could also cause a massive recession or depression, which could grind the economy to a halt, which would mean that the government is taking in less tax revenue while still spending exorbitantly on entrenched government programs and stimulus, which would only increase budgetary deficits and debt issuance once more. The Federal Reserve can lower interest rates, but that would immediately cause an uptick in inflation, as people are encouraged to borrow and spend with lower interest rates, which would then force the Fed to raise interest rates again. The Federal Reserve can admit defeat and raise the inflation target to 3 or 4%, but that would signal that the system is failing, which would cause a further loss of confidence, which would result in less Treasury buyers, resulting in more inflation, and would create demand for higher interest rates because Treasury investors want to keep up with inflation, which, again, causes bigger interest payments, and so forth. This is a debt spiral. There is no way out. You are witnessing it live. These are the years that will go down in the all-time history books. Every fiat currency has failed, and for the same reason. Turning on the money printer is too tempting. Don't forget, the U.S. government will never let the treasury market fail, because that would result in an automatic default on the debt and an unbelievably chaotic avalanche of collapse. They will always turn to the money printer to bail things out. The treasury will continue to print more money to keep the system afloat, as evidenced by their upcoming buyback operation. But inflation is the fatal flaw. The Ponzi scheme is in its final chapter. The end game is here. The inflation train has left the station and it's never coming back. COVID put the ruin into hyperdrive. Inflation ran away. Now it cannot be tamed. It is feeding on itself and will continue to do so over and over, gradually, then suddenly. And then poof, it's gone. Worthlessness. If you haven't noticed, the US dollar has been heading toward the worthless direction for quite some time. It is inevitable. The US dollar and all fiat currencies will die. The phoenix will then rise from the ashes. An innovative, specifically designed, global, unprincipled, unable to be manipulated, verifiable, instantaneous digital monetary system will emerge, unchained from the grasp of bankers and governments once and for all. And the world was fixed. Fix the money, fix the world. This episode is brought to you by CoinKite and the Cold Card Hardware Wallet. That is how you are going to keep your Bitcoin safe. You only really know that you own Bitcoin if you hold your own keys. And the only way to safely and conveniently hold your own keys is with a solid, secure, easy-to-use hardware wallet. Now, the great thing about the Cold Card and basically all of CoinKite's devices is they are extremely focused on security above everything else and giving that optionality for extra features, for edge cases, to be able to use it entirely air-gapped from start to finish, but then also have the option of NFC and USB communication. But even cooler is if you want to know without question that those things are not accessible, they literally have it marked on the PCB board that you can open up the device and you can scratch the connection and break it physically to all of the wireless devices. And you can use the Cold Card literally physically secure from any potential wireless vulnerabilities. I, for one, am a huge fan of the NFC because I can just literally take it out of my pocket when I want to send a transaction. I make the transaction, I scan it into the Cold Card, and then hit sign, and then scan it. I tap it right back to my phone, and it goes back, and then boom, I can broadcast that transaction. My keys are entirely secure. My phone can get hacked. My phone can get stolen. Nobody can get my Bitcoin. My Cold Card keeps them safe. But then also the Cold Card Q, which has the larger screen, now lets you add QR code scanning and displaying to communicate that information back and forth. And it's even got a full QWERTY keyboard, so you can literally type it. It's basically a cypherpunk BlackBerry, and it is really cool. Then we also have the Tap Signer. We have the SATS cards. There's so many amazing devices in the Block Clock, and you can get a discount at their store with code Bitcoin Audible, all one word. Details and links will be right in the show notes. Something about the way this was written, it just so cleanly explains the absurdity of the situation. There is a weird sort of popular belief, or I think assumption, that is made by a lot of people that because the government seems to behave and act in this sort of special universe where things don't have to make sense. And into it can be the opposite of something that's kind of intuitively obvious. They're literally treated as if they're magic. the number of people who say that we could just pay for everything if you printed the money, or that we could just all be made as wealthy as we possibly, as we could possibly desire, if the government just allowed it, if we were just evenly distribute all the funds. The number of people and the number of times that has either been an explicit argument or an implicit foundation for what they were arguing is almost shocking. There is nothing special about government. There's nothing special about the people in government. They're the same normal assholes as everybody else. They just get to control what other people see about them. And they're rich. And they're rich because they're powerful, because they get to write down on pieces of paper and make decisions and vote together about how to allocate hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars that don't even exist because they are just printing it from a literal money printer and then handing it out to people. And then everybody coalesces around them and decides to work for them and try to get their favor, which makes them all the more powerful because everybody with half a brain knows they're going to get paid a whole lot more if they can just cozy up to the money printer than if they have to work really hard and trade with honest people doing actually valuable work. When there is a money printer printing trillions of dollars and distributing it out, then the point of the economy shifts away from providing value and helping other people that you need to trade with, and it then becomes about providing value, cozying up to, and making the political class look good. The economy literally shifts from the doing of actually valuable things that the people in the middle class, in the poor class, actually need and want, the people who are actually putting up the foundation of this whole thing, and it entirely shifts towards the counterfeit class and just granting whatever politicians want so that they get included in these giant $2 trillion spending bills, this chock full of just subsidies and lobbyists, and that nobody in Congress even reads. It is wall-to-wall corruption around a top to bottom Ponzi scheme. We were born into a Ponzi scheme. We worship the Ponzi scheme. We vote for and participate in the Ponzi scheme as if the Ponzi scheme is a special system that's better than everybody else, that society can't exist without the Ponzi scheme, and that all the people who run and benefit from the Ponzi scheme are the reason society exists, and they're the ones that we should put up on a pedestal and that we should emulate and we would try to be, because they are the great. They are the elite. They're the ones that make the world go round, because look, all of the funnels, all of the wealth goes back up to them, because look at them, great and masterful at the top of the Ponzi scheme. All it is a really, really, really big Ponzi scheme. But it's not any different. It just takes 100 years to unravel and understand every single Ponzi scheme has people who profit from it and people who hold the bag. It is structurally necessary for that to be the case. Because it doesn't create value, it funnels it, it cycles it from the bottom to the top. I want to hit a few key points and really reiterate how absurd the monetary system that we are in really is. Quote, the U.S. government spends in a budgetary deficit, then issues treasuries to pay for the spending, then at a bigger rate than anybody else, buys those treasuries to cover the loss. An unbelievable Ponzi scheme. The U.S. government is the director of the Ponzi scheme, the old investor, and the new investor. A true masterclass. And what is so critically important to understand is that the government is cycling this through themselves to keep up the counterfeit class that lives off of the government. And there is a single and explicit bag holder, the person who saves in dollars. The dollar, the currency, is the bag. Either the government defaults on the debt, or everyone on a dollar economy gets wiped out. And understand, any time that anybody ever chooses between themselves and some other random person, especially somebody who only got to where they were because they desperately wanted power, they wanted control, they wanted other people to think that they were important and clap for them and have to ask them and get their permission for everything that they wanted to do, I promise you, when the shit hits the fan, they bail out themselves, not us. To the contrary, it is set up to make sure we are the ones who pay for the bag. Not only are they not protecting us, they're doing everything they can to make sure we cannot protect ourselves from them. And that is human nature. And after you've already propped up a system where the worst in human nature gets put on the pedestal, you only make the situation worse, not better. The government is not going to sacrifice itself to save the people. The government literally, as an ideological system, believes it is its birthright to milk the people of everything that they have, because without the government, society doesn't exist. It's like a cancer that genuinely believes it is the organism, and that without it, the organism cannot function. What is so crazy about the situation is that the Ponzi scheme is the default. That's how money around the world is set up. It is all a Ponzi. All fiat currencies are set up this way. And not only is the United States government the big cheese, not only are they the top dog of the entire hierarchy of and network of global Ponzis, but because of that, as the other Ponzis collapse, people funnel into the dollar Ponzi as a solution, because it's a Ponzi that can sustain a larger problem, a larger imbalance than all of the other smaller Ponzis. But it doesn't fix the Ponzi. It just means it scales and survives until it gets bigger and bigger and larger and consuming more and more people and more countries. And only when the biggest Ponzi of them all grows too big does it all then break apart and shatter into 1,000 pieces. But no matter who you are or what way you lean or whatever nonsense that anyone in this audience may hold about their view of this, I promise you this, and do not deceive yourself. They will print instead of default. They will sacrifice you in a second to protect their own asses. And this is the heart of the freedom security quote, that those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. But it's even more fundamental to the idea of deserving liberty or safety, is that there's no such thing as safety without liberty. You might get some benefit from the government. You might get a nice little room with a fresh bed, and they'll wash your clothes for you and give you free health care. And it might be really nice when things are going well. And it might feel like you got a little bit of safety. You don't have to worry about your retirement so much. Maybe you get a small guaranteed paycheck and you just don't have to stress so much about getting a job and being useful somewhere. Because that's a really hard thing to do. But one day you're going to find out that all of those promises are unsustainable, and that there is no magic wand, and you can't just create wealth out of thin air, and that you have to literally steal it from the people to provide those things, and that all you've actually done is you've put a whole bunch of people who don't care about the cost and don't care about the results of any of their decisions, you've put them in charge of all of the decisions, and it gets filled with corruption and lobbying and special interests and subsidies and lies and debts on top of debts on top of debts. And then when the shit hits the fan and it finally blows up in everybody's face 30, 40, 50 years later, the door to that room is going to shut in your face one day, and you're going to find out that it's a cage. There's no such thing as safety without liberty.
I think he's right, too, that we've reached a point where there's no taming it. Like, there's no reeling it back in. Like, the inflation monster got out, and we've reached a point where this is the new norm until it gets worse. And that's what I think is so important to understand. Like, this is a debt spiral. We cannot pay. Think about this. We've issued so much debt and rolled over and refinanced so much debt that we cannot pay for the interest, let alone touch the principal. We can't pay for the interest on our previous debt without issuing new debt at higher interest. And we have nobody buying that debt, even at high interest, so we're going to have to print money to buy our own debt that we are using to pay off the interest of the old debt that is still needing to be refinanced every single year. There's a really big problem that the human mind, the average human is extremely, I mean, it just is difficult to picture and see, to be aware of and to respond to large, slow shifts. Something that's really big and really, really slow that is moving or breaking or changing in some fundamental way, it is insanely difficult to piece it together. Especially when the results occur over years, over 5 years, 10 years. You have to have an extremely strong foundation of thinking about all of the different macro pieces and environments and how things respond to each other to even just kind of like start to get some sort of blob-like amalgamation that's showing the shift that is happening. And when that starts extending out to like 50 years, 100 years, it just becomes this like distant, so it doesn't even become real. You know, history isn't real. It's just this crazy, really kind of like iconified thing that happened, you know, 50 years ago or 100 years ago. It's like it's World War II, and you just hear about World War II, and there's some sort of weird sort of fictitious narrative, this very like, it's a Disney movie way that it's told to us and that we're led to believe it. And so it becomes this thing that we are disconnected from rather than inputs into the real world. It feels more like Santa Claus or Hollywood or something, you know, like George Washington and cut down the cherry tree. It just becomes so mythologized as to kind of lose its meaning. You lose its relevance to what is happening today. When in reality, things that were started in the 1910s, the 1920s, 1930s, huge decisions that were made in the 1970s, that after a year goes by, you just kind of like, ah, whatever, that's in the past. Well, the world didn't end, so obviously that thing that happened 4 years ago or 5 years ago is fine, and that's just how things are now. That's the new normal. And so it's incredibly difficult to understand when 30 years later, something huge happens to recognize that it's actually that decision made 30 years ago that put this in play, that virtually made this outcome inevitable. I mean, I can hear it in people's reactions. Is, you know, I'm talking today about how like, oh, well, you know, the 2020 and, you know, 2021 banking crises and the shutdowns, and the bank financing term program, whatever the hell that thing, the BT, bank term financing program, BTFP, is coming due and expiring now, and we're going to see these bank collapses and stuff happen again. I can hear it in the other people. I can see it in their faces. I can hear it bouncing around in their head. They think, oh, that thing that happened 2 years ago? Yeah. But, you know, you told me it was going to be terrible and the world didn't end. You have to understand how many of these things, like if earnings miss, or some sort of, you know, reserve asset actually shifts in value, a lot of times it doesn't even get recognized as having happened or caused an impact or accounted for in some next layer until the next quarter. And then in order to get to the next layer, to get to spread that information through the next part of the market, you go through business contracts that are set up for multiple years. You go through financing and options contracts that are sold 3 months out, 6 months out, a year out, and that literally don't come due. That the paper that everybody's just like, oh, well, in 9 months, everything will be fixed. So we can just go ahead and make this agreement. And they kick the can. But the actual transmission of the information literally happens quarter by quarter, year by year, as the contracts roll around, as things expire and suddenly show back up on balance sheets. Then imbalances become far more obvious, but you can see them ahead of time, but they won't be visible in the market. They don't get shown in the prices until stuff actually rolls over, especially when you've literally bailed yourself out of the previous collapse by just saying we'll pay for it in 2 years. And then in 2 years, you can't pay for the interest on the debt that you issued to promise to pay off the debt and issuance and interest that you already could not afford. But this has to ripple through trillions and trillions of dollars worth of contracts denominated in all sorts of time expirations, in all types of agreements, in long-term wage contracts, in profit share contracts, in shareholder agreements, in venture capital funds, in bonds that are built, that are created for explicit periods of time. You can only see why any of this matters or have any idea what's going on if you are looking at the 5, 10, 20, 30, 50 year trends. Otherwise, you don't see any of it. It's all invisible. If you're focusing on what is right in front of you, you will have no idea. And suddenly, and viciously, there will be spurts when it starts to show up. But it is a truly gradually then suddenly thing. The exit will close when it is obvious that the entire building is on fire. And understand, it is on fire. There's actually an economist, Hyman Minsky, who coined the term the Minsky moment. And one of the things that he, or I guess his primary research, his area of study, was about how financial systems, how financial and monetary systems move the slow incremental progression from stability to fragility, and then basically catalyzing or concluding in giant, in essentially an epic crisis. He basically wanted to investigate, why does this keep happening? Why is this the norm of financial and monetary systems in the modern age? And the reference, his the phrase, the Minsky moment, refers to when it becomes evident that we are moving into the crisis phase. And he specifically talked about all of this in the context of debt, because it's just the incredible and constant accumulation of unsustainable debts that causes this entire feedback, this entire system to play out with this clear progression throughout history. It's always debt. Anytime a society is saying the debt doesn't matter, which we've been saying for like 30 years and basically acting as if it does for 30 years, you know that society is doomed, because it does. It always does. It necessarily does, because it means we are destroying resources and not putting it back. That's all. That is literally what debt means, that you use shit up before you make it. It couldn't be any simpler. And there's no like way to account your way out of what's actually happening with boots on the ground. All you do is hide it because you've defrauded the accounting system of society. You've printed money and just tried to make it not so obvious that we're just destroying shit. But Minsky described three different kinds of borrowers. Is you'd have the hedge borrowers that can make all of their debt payments from both the interest and the principal from the current cash inflows, and they have simply hedged against that to access capital more quickly. Then there is the speculative borrower who can only service their debt, like they can only actually pay for the interest and have to roll over the principal of the debt. And then there is literally the Ponzi borrower who can't make payments on the interest or the principal, cannot cover either of that from normal cash inflows, and literally has to borrow more
in order to pay for the interest on the borrowing already done, and that the only hope is that the assets continue to rise in price indefinitely in order to make refinancing next time easier. Understand, this is why housing constantly goes up in price. This is why the stock market constantly goes up in price, because they are issuing money in order to quote-unquote raise the value of the assets so that they can refinance and issue more money. The Ponzi scheme is literally built on the fact that they can tax and leverage the increased apparent value of things caused by the taxation and leveraging and money printing, because the price of everything just keeps going up, which is also why the entire thing collapses when asset prices plummet, when you actually have a recession or a depression. And that's when the money just breaks. But the entire thing is structurally designed to bleed and leverage the standards of living of everybody, essentially middle class and below, and use it as collateral to print more money and issue more debt so that for the next 1 or 2 years, they cannot have the collapse happen under them. They can look really good and they can be incredibly powerful because they can pay enormous corporations and they can partner with lobbyists and unions and they can be the center of all decisions because they have the machine that prints trillions of dollars and it is all collateralized with our livelihoods. And when the Ponzi scheme blows up, when it starts to break apart, the collateral comes due. Our livelihoods are explicitly used as payment for their bullshit. And the money that we use is the system that funnels that capital from us to them. It is by design. And the Minsky moment is literally when you become a Ponzi borrower. When the collateral isn't valuable enough to refinance, when the interest rates skyrocket and are too high, and when you literally have to borrow in order to pay the interest, let alone not even touch the principal, while old principals are rolling over, which you have to issue more debt at higher interest just to keep from imploding everything, and when nobody is buying your debt, so you have to buy it yourself. And you still can't get inflation at 2%, which itself is horrible. That's a Minsky moment. And I do not see he talks about the options here. Like, what do you do? Do you raise interest rates to curb inflation? Well, then you have worse inflation because you're already having to issue new bonds for the interest rate, now at a higher interest rate, and you have to pay for it. You have to buy your own bonds. So literally every outcome of every decision is more inflation. It's just through a different part of this circular logic of money. It's no different than essentially that they would just print money and never actually go into debt. The difference is literally just at what stage the money printing, the actual moving of new money into the economy occurs, and at what time period it occurs. The ability to issue as debt simply delays the need for the actual monetary inflation, while directly printing money would just cause the inflation today. So that's what they want. That's the reason it's issued as debt, is because it looks better in the short term and hurts worse in the long term. And there's something else really important to point out just in kind of the data set that he doesn't show here in this Twitter thread, but the amount borrowed from the Federal Reserve in the emergency lending services that they have. This is specifically to banks to understand where we are in the banking crisis. So in the last like 30 years or so, or I guess between since like 2002, there have been three spikes in the emergency lending services, or the amount of capital lent from the Federal Reserve to banks. And obviously 2008 and 2009 was like the huge spike, right? But the thing is that it's usually flat. Like, nothing is actually lent normally from the Federal Reserve. You don't need the Federal Reserve. You lend and borrow money within the economy, because that's the whole point of the economy, is to allocate resources efficiently. And so after like 2011 or so, that number basically vanishes, and then it's zero on the chart. There's just nothing. And that's what you typically see, is that there's lending during emergency periods, and then it's just flat everywhere else because people aren't borrowing from the Federal Reserve. Well, since 2020, there was another huge spike up of use of the emergency lending facility. But it's never gone back to zero. It's just hovered. And then there was another little spike in 2021, and then it slowly kind of gradually declined, like it might be going back to zero. And then there was a giant spike in 2023. And now it's again trying to slowly go down and find a new norm, but I think we're going to hit another spike. I don't think we'll ever see it at zero again. I think this is now a permanent part of the economy, because we've reached a point where we're past that Minsky moment where there's just no packing this back into the bottle. The only way out is to ratchet this up one after the other, and the inflation is going to get worse and worse and worse. Our periods of respite and the periods of, quote, seeming stability in the dollar are going to get shorter and a lot less relieving. And this is all on top of the fact that the economy is slowing. We are still right on the edge, if not in, a pretty weak recessionary period. And lending has been squeezed because of the higher interest rates. And I think there's another big disconnect, too. It's not just the whole people can't see the long-term trends and stuff. It's also that you cannot see the size of the problem that has occurred. And it's important to remember that we have the global reserve currency. So we can confiscate value. We can issue government spending that is spread out across the entire planet. But it is so important to understand the degree of impact and the degree of political economy that we have in the United States. Now, a lot of people think the way it is always compared when it comes to government spending is how much in relation to GDP. But it's important to understand why it is that GDP is such a useless metric. So here's a good example. The government issues a crap ton of loans to a bunch of banks, and then those banks lend out to a bunch of people in the corporate and the corporate class and the counterfeit class, and they buy a bunch of financial assets, they buy a bunch of goods and services, they buy up a bunch of small businesses, whatever it is. All of that activity, this is actually counting the same money multiple times. So when the banks lend it out, then when they spend it, at each stage, this is adding to the GDP, which means that when the government is spending trillions of dollars, they literally are adding, they become a vast portion of the GDP because so much activity then comes off of that those trillions of dollars that they spend. But some generic calculation of GDP isn't the measure of our impact on the society. It isn't a measure of how much the people are actually in charge of what the society does, where economic resources are spent and allocated. To the contrary, the GDP as a metric is actually obscuring the degree to which we have a political economy. Our ability to influence the economy and to influence the relative trade or prices of goods and services is because we actually go out and work. We voluntarily trade our time. We have skin in the game with our decisions that we make. We earn our money, and then we turn around and spend that money. That decision, those choices to go with an Android instead of an iPhone, or to reinvest into our home and make our family more secure, or save those resources for a rainy day, or to get our kids braces instead of going on another vacation. All of those decisions allow us to take the value that we produce in the economy and then redirect it into the areas. Like, you got that money as a record of the value that you put in. And so now you have the right, you have the privilege of being able to allocate those resources wherever is most valuable to you, which is to fix your kids' teeth, to make sure that they grow up happy, that your family is secure, that a rainy day doesn't wipe you out.
And so you direct, you cater the economy, you push the economy ever so slightly in the direction of providing those goods and services for you, which means our ability to direct the resources in the economy, the free market actually being a response to the free people who are actually building the economy, is based on our income. It's based on what we are getting for production. That is the value that we are trading, earning, and then reallocating based on our values and what we hope to have for our lives. So what is the median income? It's $40,000, right thereabout. But it's also important to account for how many people are actually working. There's lots of kids. There's lots of stay-at-home husbands and wives. There's a lot of families. There's a lot of dependent elderly. The workforce of the United States is only 167 million people. So how much income is that in total? How much directional power to guide the economy towards what those people value and their skin in the game decisions that actually matter, that actually have impact, that they actually know the weight and the cost of what they are spending money on, and they actually live and deal with the consequences, so they care about the results of that expenditure as well, of how that capital is allocated. How much is that? It's $6.7 trillion. Do you know how much the government spent? $6.1 trillion. Half of our entire economic system is entirely run through politics and the counterfeit class. We do not run this country. And how much of those incomes are just being hired by giant corporations that received the preferential financing from a bunch of banks that got bailed out for corruption and fraud by the government so that they could keep buying the government bonds, which the government is now printing money in order to buy from themselves. So not only is half, truly half, of all of the directional force of the economy run by a giant, centralized, top-down, authoritative, socialist system, but it also completely disincentivizes and throws out of balance the $6.7 trillion that's actually got skin in the game. We have no way to actually communicate legitimate information about what we should be doing. All the prices are nonsense. They have nothing to do with us. They have nothing to do with reality. It's a giant fraud. The entire thing gets shifted to propping up the Ponzi scheme and working for the Ponzi directors and all of the class of counterfeiters that huddle around them. Understand, the cancer is the same size as the actual organism, and they have been papering over it to try to make it seem as if this is not the case. And the only reason it has been able to sustain itself for as long as it has is because it is feeding off the cancer of 182 other currencies. It doesn't have to eat the organism because it's eating the whole world in order to trick the organism into thinking that it isn't a burden and that it has a magic wand and that it can do anything at any scale indefinitely for free with no consequence. The rest of the world isn't buying it anymore. And this right here may be the closest thing we get to a break in this. And we might just ratchet up in a series of plateaus, crisis to crisis, for the next 10 to 15 years, depending on how long it takes for all of this to play out. But I don't see any way out of this. That there just isn't one. And it also means chaos for the price of Bitcoin in both directions. It's important to remember that, you know, asset prices are likely to collapse when this sort of thing unfolds, but then they're going to rocket up. There's going to be massive volatility. So any sort of leverage, even if in the right direction, can still get clobbered while it moves temporarily in the wrong direction. So just be extremely careful with that sort of stuff. I've still put myself in a bit of a spot, potentially, with loans to, you know, work on the house and stuff, very long-term stuff that I've bought time in, but there's a risk, you know, like there's always, like the price of Bitcoin could easily go back to $20,000, especially in a chaotic kind of crisis moment.
And that'll margin call all sorts of leverage and options and even collateralized loans. And we're in an environment where we can't just ignore systemic risk. It is increasingly prevalent and pervasive. So making those decisions, it's important to keep that in mind, to know what your degree of risk is. If things really could just totally blow up, what happens if your bank, you just can't contact your bank and there's no way to send money out tomorrow morning? What does that mean for you? I don't know. This was a fantastic thread, and I think just goes to show, because the U.S. Treasury has made this decision, just shows how clearly nothing that was done was solving any of the previous problems. That the pain of realizing that even raising interest rates is not going to do anything for curbing inflation, and in doing so, we've basically started the ball rolling on the snowball going down the hill, and I just don't see, there seems to be no way out. There seems to be no way out. It seems like the only thing that can happen is that it grows bigger and rolls faster. And our only chance is to get out of its way. And that means leave the dollar in every possible sense that you can and protect yourself from that. Protect yourself from third parties. Protect yourself from financial institutions. Protect yourself from leverage. Protect yourself from relying on your wages and salaries. Because if the price of everything doubles, you have a 50% pay cut. This is not meant to be doom and gloom, but we should expect to see this. And it's really, really easy to procrastinate. Do one thing. Make one thing 1% better every single day. And we will keep unpacking all of this and exploring the solutions and the problems on Bitcoin Audible and in my other shows, everything that I do over here, AI Unchained, the YouTube channel, the Rumble channel, on Keet and the Guy Swan Network broadcast channel to stay up on all of the things that we're doing. In fact, I will have the Keet broadcast channel, which will have all of my shows, all of my content, the memes, the two sats videos, everything will publish through the Keet broadcast channel. So that will be a great way to actually stay up on all of the things that I'm up to, and a kind of central peer-to-peer, central decentralized location for all of the things that I do and how to get in, how to find all of my platforms and get in contact with me. So check it out. I will have the pair link in the show notes so you can join and check out all of the really cool things we are doing over there. With that, thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you so much to Swan Bitcoin and to CoinKite for supporting this show. A thank you to Cole for this fantastic thread that totally blew up. And a thank you to Bitcoin for giving us a freaking way out of this absolute utter mess. It is time to exit the Ponzi scheme. How ironic is it that everyone thinks that Bitcoin is the Ponzi scheme when literally it is the cure to the Ponzi we have been born into? Don't forget to subscribe, and I will catch you on the next episode of Bitcoin Audible. Until then, everybody, take it easy, guys. The whole government is just a Ponzi scheme. Bernie Madoff.